Priscilla ran upstairs and flung herself on her bed and sobbed. Lana followed.
"Priscilla, love, what is it? Leave me alone. I'm not going to leave you alone. Don't forget I live here too."
She tried to make a joke, but Priscilla remained on her stomach, crying her heart out into the pillow.
"Priscilla, you're going to make me cry in a minute. Here, take my handkerchief."
Priscilla reached an arm out and snatched it. After plenty of sniffing, she finally sat up, her eyes red-rimmed and her face flushed.
"Please talk to me, love. You know I'll understand."
"How can you understand?" Priscilla shouted. "Peter's got his father, and I don't know where my mother and father even are. Maybe the house got bombed, and that's why they haven't received my letters."
This was terrible. Perhaps there was another way for Priscilla to understand what had happened. Keeping her arm firmly round the child, she said, "Priscilla, I'm going to tell you a story. One day, a lady met a man who was in the Navy. He was everything she ever dreamed of. Dark-haired, very handsome, with a lovely smile, and he made her laugh. When the war started, they knew they would be separated for long periods while he was out at sea on his ship, but they decided to become engaged. He gave her his grandmother's engagement ring, but she wouldn't wear it on her finger. She always wore it round her neck, because he was about to go away and fight, and she wanted them both to tell her parents they were going to be married the next time he was on shore leave. He wrote as often as he could, and soon it was time for him to come home for a few days. He said he'd be docking in Liverpool in October. She was so excited. But he never came. His ship was blown up by the Germans. She never saw him again. She was broken-hearted. The future they'd dreamed of was in ruins. Lana gulped. She noticed Priscilla was actually listening. "She didn't know how she could bear to go on," Lana continued. "But she had to. It was happening to thousands of families up and down the country. She thought she would get her revenge and join one of the services, but in her heart she wanted to go on doing what she was good at, teaching. So she changed her teaching job in Yorkshire and went to Liverpool to make a fresh start, knowing it was what her fiancé would have wanted. He was always so proud of her. At first, the lady kept pretending he was still alive, that he'd come back and they would get married, but her head told her it would never happen. So she had to face it, or she would suffer for the rest of her life." Lana stopped. Had she gone too far? Would Priscilla think she was off her head? But Priscilla was watching her, chewing her bottom lip, another tear falling down her cheek. She could hear Priscilla's jerky breaths and saw the girl's eyes flick to Dickie's engagement ring.
"The lady was you, wasn't it?"
Lana gulped. "Yes, it was. I'll never forget him, but I have to carry on. And it's the same with you. We must both make new friends and they'll help us. And you and I will help one another." Priscilla screwed her face up as though hardly daring to utter her next words. Lana heard her gulp as she asked,
"Are Mummy and Daddy really dead?"
"Yes, darling, they are. But they're still watching over you, just as Dickie is watching over me."
"I don't know what to do."
Priscilla brushed her arm across her face. "I've been thinking about asking Mrs. Taylor if she could arrange a service in the chapel, especially for your mother and father. You could invite the children and pick out any music you think your parents would like. It would be a way of saying how much you love them and to say goodbye." There was another silence. Then in a small voice, Priscilla said,
"Would you come with me?"
"Yes, love, of course I will."
She looked at Priscilla. "Why don't you clean your teeth and hop into bed? I'll be up shortly, all right?" To her huge relief, Priscilla nodded. Janice had propped a letter for her on the mantelpiece. The envelope was typed with a county council rubber stamp. Lana unfolded the sheet of paper and glanced at the signature. It was from Mr. Shepherd. Dear Miss Ashwin, I should be grateful if you would be so kind as to come to the council offices, address above, on Monday morning at 9:30. There is something important I wish to discuss. I look forward to seeing you then. Yours sincerely, George Shepherd. Frowning, Lana skimmed the note again in case she'd missed something. She couldn't make out the tone. Was he going to tell her off, or was he going to praise her? It was impossible to guess. She shrugged. Monday would come soon enough, no doubt.
Chapter 21.
Living in Bingham Village, Lana realised, as she looked at the devastation around her in the centre of Liverpool, meant they were cocooned from much of the war itself. Yes, they would sometimes hear the sirens go off in Albert Dock, and the noise of explosions, and occasionally feel the vibrations. But thankfully the bombing didn't impair much on the children's daily lives. Maxine had told her two bombs had dropped in the grounds of the orphanage in the last 2 years, causing three adults and two children's deaths, which was tragic. But thankfully lessons, the daily routine and Bertie's delicious meals, made from generous rations by the government, were the staples of life at Bingham Hall. Lana had never been a great one for shopping, so an outing in the city didn't appeal at the best of times. But maybe today she should take the opportunity to visit one of the art galleries. Athena had mentioned the Walker Gallery, saying it was Liverpool's finest. She'd wander over after seeing Mr. Shepherd. At 9:45, Lana stood outside the town hall. Dominating the surrounding buildings in Castle Street, with its classical portico and dome, it had taken a hit during the Blitz, but appeared to be open. She gasped as she stepped inside. She wasn't expecting such a sumptuous interior. A massive chandelier hung from an ornate ceiling, and marble pilasters formed a rhythmic pattern to the walls of the foyer. Before she had time to admire such a room, a woman, dressed from head to foot in black, ushered her into a small waiting area, and at exactly 10 o'clock she took Lana down a wide corridor and knocked on the third door along. "Enter."
"Miss Ashwin to see you, sir."
The woman made a small bob with her head. "Would you bring us tea?" George Shepherd asked her. She nodded and disappeared. Mr. Shepherd rose from his chair and removed his spectacles before taking Lana's proffered hand. "Thank you for coming, Miss Ashwin. Do take a seat." He gestured to one of the visitors' chairs with a jerky movement. Lana was sure he was uncomfortable, nervous even. What was going on? He certainly didn't look as though he was about to sing her praises. She waited while he cleared his throat. "Miss Ashwin," he cleared his throat again. "Miss Ashwin, how are you finding the job?" She gave a small start. She sent him a report each week and always received an answer back straight away, saying how delighted he was.
Very well, I believe. The children seem to have accepted me. They're making excellent progress with their reading and writing, and I'm very keen that they do so. We're writing a play with some made-up songs, telling the story of Oliver Twist. And Priscilla Morgan, the child you said needs the most attention, has taken a major role. Already she's improving and actually joining in a little with the others in her class. She's quite, Mr. Shepherd interrupted. "Most interesting. However, let me see.
He picked up a file on his desk and flipped through it, then frowned. "Now, where's that letter gone?" He adjusted his spectacles and put his hand on an envelope, which had already been opened. Unfolding the paper, he put it down and removed his spectacles again before he looked her in the eye. Lana began to feel quite concerned. She wished he'd get it over with, whatever it was he wanted to tell her. "Now, where was I? Oh, yes, the letter from Mr. Benton." Mr. Benton? The previous headmaster? Why was he writing to Mr. Shepherd? "Miss Ashwin." There was a knock at the door, and the same woman came in with a tray of tea. She set a cup down in front of Lana and the other in Mr. Shepherd's line of vision. Lana noticed he seemed almost grateful for the interruption by the way he smiled at the woman and didn't dismiss her right away. "Would that be all, sir?" He seemed to come to his senses.
Yes, indeed, Mrs. Lidbetter, thank you."
He hesitated again.
Take your time with your tea, Miss Ashwin."
He put his own cup to his lips and took a few gulps.
"Please, Mr. Shepherd, tell me why you need to speak to me. It must be something important."
Yes, of course." He sent her a grave look. "I have had some rather disturbing news." Lana's heart plummeted.
"You remember my telling you Mr. Benton was the headmaster, but joined up to fight our worthy battle? Well, I'm afraid he's been injured."
It was awful to feel such relief, but obviously Mr. Shepherd was sounding her out. He wanted her to continue in her position on a permanent basis. That's why he wanted to know how she personally felt about the position, not just the reports she sent off to him. Her heart sang. It was the best news he could have given her. Although she was delighted, she made herself look serious.
"Oh, that's awful. Poor Mr. Benton. But, of course, I'll stay on permanently."
Mr. Shepherd drummed his fingers together.
"I'm not sure you understand," he said. "He's been injured too badly to continue fighting, but he's not at death's door."
"Oh, thank goodness. He's asked to have his old job back." Cold shockwaves poured down Lana's spine.
"No. But if he's injured, surely he..."
"He's lost an arm. But he's not ill, just can't hold a gun. He assures me he can do the job just as well with one arm."
He looked beseechingly at Lana and shook his head. "What can I do? I have to let him have it. He's entitled to it."
"But that's most unfair on me," Lana burst out. "I'm so happy there and doing good work with the children."
"The thing is, Miss Ashwin, it was only a temporary position. I did make it clear at our interview."
"Yes, but I thought it was going to last longer than a few weeks," Lana said, a spurt of anger threatening to rise to the surface. "I wouldn't have accepted the job if I'd known."
"I don't suppose Mr. Benton wanted to lose an arm," Mr. Shepherd said calmly. Trying to gather her thoughts, she took a few sips of her tea, which was now lukewarm, but she felt she was choking.
"When will he be coming back?"
she asked finally, her voice cracking.
"In a fortnight."
"It doesn't give me much time to make another big change to my life."
She looked at the man facing her. There was a light sheen of sweat over his top lip, as though he couldn't wait to get this meeting over with. She couldn't feel sorry. It was all very well for him. He probably lived in Liverpool or close by, and apart from the Merchant Navy, had been sitting at this same desk for the last 20 years. She'd moved all the way down here from Yorkshire, some 200 miles, to start a new job. It was her chance to try to come to terms with losing Dickie. Now her new job, which she was growing to love, had been cut short by one ex-soldier's request.
She suddenly felt ashamed. Poor man had lost an arm. It must be devastating for him.
Regaining his old position would likely make him feel more normal again after what he'd been through. He had no idea who'd taken his place. Mr. Shepherd was right. He'd made it clear from the advertisement as well as at the interview that it was not a permanent position. Lana sighed and finished her tea, then rose to her feet. She extended her hand. "I'm sorry, Mr. Shepherd. You must think me awfully churlish when I'm only thinking about myself, and there's a war on. It's just that..."
"Don't give it another thought," he said, shaking her hand. "It's a shame, as you were doing an excellent job."
"I'll have everything packed up by Friday week."
Lana gulped as she felt the telltale prick of tears. She would not let him see her cry. Mr. Shepherd rushed to open the door for her.
"I'll send you your last month's salary," he said, "and see if there's a chance they can put in an extra week for your trouble."
"I'd be very grateful."
It took all her effort to smile at him as she told him goodbye. Outside, she felt someone had punched her in the stomach. That weak cup of cold tea hadn't helped at all. But she didn't care to linger in Liverpool. It was just too depressing. She couldn't bear the idea of going back home with another failure. Even though Mr. Shepherd had made it patently clear this was nothing to do with her performance at work, she felt her eyes brim and told herself off.
"Come on, Lana, it's not the end of the world. You just have to rethink this whole teaching lark."
But it was far from any lark. She took it seriously, but at the same time she loved it. And then it hit her. Priscilla. The child was just beginning to trust her to open up a little. How could she leave such a bruised young girl? That awful look of despair in Priscilla's eyes would be back, and she hadn't yet told Maxine her idea of having a service in the chapel for Priscilla's parents. She'd better do it right away, before she had to pack up her things and say goodbye. Chapter 22. 2 hours later, Lana was sitting in Maxine's office. "I'm looking forward to hearing how everything went yesterday," Maxine said, leaning forward, eager for news. Mr. Best." "Oh, it's Carl now, is it?" Maxine teased, her eyes twinkling with mischief. Lana could have bitten her tongue out as warmth stole to her cheeks. "I do believe you're blushing," Maxine said. "He asked me to call him Carl," Lana said, wishing she was anywhere but under Maxine's amused gaze. "I'm not going to tease you any more," Maxine said, chuckling. "But it doesn't sound as though you found him to be quite the enemy you thought." "It's true," Lana said. "Now I know he wasn't a supporter of Hitler, quite the opposite. I have a feeling there's a big story behind his escape. But of course he can't say anything, especially with the minder's eyes fixed on him all the time." "Yes, that must be horrible," Maxine paused. "So what did you talk about?" "Mostly I left Peter to have as much time as possible with his father," Lana said. "That was the important thing." "What about Priscilla? Was she all right?" "She was quiet, which is what I expected. It was rather an unnatural meeting for everyone, really. But she was okay. That is, until we got home. Then she sobbed her heart out. I guessed what was coming. She was envious that Peter had seen his father, and she didn't even know where her parents were." "She's still set on that track?" Maxine murmured, writing a few notes on a pad. "Not exactly," Lana quickly told Maxine the story she'd related to Priscilla. "So she accepts that her parents are never coming back for her," Maxine said, scribbling away. "I think so, but she's in a state now, as you can imagine. I've been thinking, would it be possible for you to arrange a service in the chapel here, especially for her parents, with some hymns, so Priscilla can say goodbye to them? Not to close the door on them, I don't mean that," she added hastily, "but to let them go." "I think that's a really good idea," Maxine said. "Would you help the child to pick out some hymns and prepare her for the service? She trusts you." Lana was silent. This was exactly what she wanted to do, help Priscilla in any way she could. But she'd be home in a week. There was no point in staying any longer. Maxine was looking at her directly, waiting for an answer. "Sorry, that sounded a bit rude of me," Maxine said, smiling. I didn't mean it to come out quite like that. I'm sure you've got plenty to do, preparing for next term and marking papers. And of course there'll be spoiled today, which the kiddies love." No, it's not that," Lana said unhappily. "You see, I'm only here for a few more days." "What do you mean?" "The previous headmaster's been injured, lost an arm, but wants his old job back." She told Maxine about her meeting with Mr. Shepherd earlier on that morning, and her eyes swam with tears. "I don't want to go home. It'll be as though I haven't achieved what I set out to do, to be the best headmistress I can possibly be. I wanted so much to help Priscilla. She's such a damaged child, and now I won't have the opportunity." She reached in her handbag for a handkerchief and blew her nose. "Sorry, Maxine, but it's all been rather a shock." "Oh, Lana, it's me who's sorry." Maxine came round from her desk and bent to put an arm round her. "Just as we've become friends. There must be something we can do so you don't have to leave." "Well, there isn't, and I know two people who will be delighted." She gave Maxine a watery smile. "Janice will be over the moon to have the cottage back to herself, and Mrs. Danvers will be thrilled to have Mr. Benton back. She always sounds as though she's in love with him, the way her face takes on this reverent expression." Maxine chuckled. "I don't know her, but if she lives up to the name of Rebecca's housekeeper, then she must be awful. But I have heard the reputation of the headmaster and wasn't very impressed. Priscilla says he was very strict with the children." She looked thoughtful for a few moments, then said, "There is one rather remote possibility, but I hardly like to mention it for fear of offending you." Lana felt a flash of hope. "You won't offend me in the least. Not how I'm feeling at the moment." Maxine rose from her desk. I was just about to have a cup of coffee, so let's go into the library. I'll get Beth to bring it through. She sent Lana a stern glance. You look like you need it. You go on. You know where the library is, and I'll be with you in a couple of minutes. Lana would have loved more time to browse in the library. It made the one at the school pale. Running her eyes over the titles in the English literature section gave her something to occupy her mind and calm her upset nerves. A few minutes later, Maxine returned and ushered Lana into the small side room they'd used before. Intrigued, Lana sat at the large round table, and Maxine took the adjacent seat, turning the chair so she was facing her. I suddenly had a thought, but you might not think it at all suitable. Go on. We're going to have a vacancy here soon. Lana's heart leapt. Oh, Maxine, how wonderful. And if you're worried that I'd be offended to be offered a teaching position after being a headmistress, don't be. I'd accept it in an instant. In fact, she smiled happily, I wasn't keen on keeping tabs on the other teachers. If I'm honest, I prefer to spend more time in class with the children. That's where I belong. She held her breath. Maxine shook her head. I'm afraid it's not a teaching position. Oh, I wish it was, as I know you'd be ideal. It was the second blow of the morning. But what is it then? I can cook a bit, but I'm no professional. She tried to laugh, but it fell flat. Didn't you once mention you could drive? Yes. What was Maxine getting at? What did that have to do with a vacancy at Bingham Hall? Harold, our chauffeur, is going into hospital for an operation next month. He'll be off work at least 6, maybe 8 weeks, so it's another temporary situation, I'm afraid. But at least it would give you time to think what you wanted to do, and maybe apply to one of the schools in Liverpool. It's not a full-time job, though, so the pay would be pro rata. I'd be happy to stand in for him, Lana said. Anything to stay longer, she thought. But I'd love to teach in the times I'm not needed, or fill in when anyone's not well or on holiday. The trouble with Harold's job is that we never know. Most of it is routine stuff like going into Liverpool for supplies or helping Charlie on any heavy jobs. But if there's an emergency, you'd have to drop tools and rush off, and that could be in the middle of a class. There was a knock at the door, and Beth came in with a tray of coffee and Bertie's warm scones straight from the oven. The comforting smell reminded Lana of her mother, when she would have a baking day once a week before she became ill. Maxine poured the coffee and handed her a cup. Sugar. Lana shook her head. I gave it up when the war started. Dad said we were bound to have sugar rationing along with many other basic ingredients, so I decided I could do without it. Maxine nodded. Your parents own a grocery shop, don't they? Yes. But the trouble nowadays is that the customers think we can take what we like from the shop and don't have to worry about coupons. They don't believe we do exactly the same as everyone else, even though it's tempting sometimes. It must be, Maxine smiled. We're so lucky here, and Bertie's a marvel. Don't know what we'd do without her. But back to you. I've just had a thought, Lana said. Priscilla. Because of all that's happened to her and how she finds it difficult to concentrate. You mentioned she's slipping behind, so I could give her extra coaching in the evenings, on a volunteer basis, of course, she added hastily. Getting Priscilla up to scratch would be marvellous, Maxine said thoughtfully. Maybe it's worked out for the best. She can pack her bits and pieces and come back with you. The other girls have settled with us again. She looked directly at Lana. Could you manage on a part-time wage? I could and would. Lana immediately said, smiling confidently, trying not to show how desperate she felt. She mustn't let this opportunity slip by. Besides, it would be driving, which she adored. Well, everything is all found, Maxine said, tapping her pen on her notepad. So I suppose it's not out of the question. You wouldn't have a cottage, unfortunately. Would that present a problem? I wouldn't expect separate accommodation, Lana said quickly. I don't have it now. I share it with the messiest person I've ever come across. I'll be quite happy with a room in the house, if that's on offer. Maxine nodded. Yes, but first let me speak to Mr. Clark at Dr. Bernardo's headquarters. I'm sure he'll be relieved that I've fixed something up satisfactorily. She looked up. I have to ask this. Have you a driving licence? Lana breathed out. Oh, yes. Some of the tension left her body for the first time that morning,
even though nothing definite was settled. Dr. Bernardo's might not agree to her taking over the driving.
I'll let you know as soon as...
Maxine was interrupted by a frantic knocking at the door. She sprang up and opened it, and a maid stood there, her eyes wide.
Beth, what on earth is the matter?
Miss, come quick. Bertie needs you.
Is someone hurt?
No, it's a mouse.
Oh, no.
Turning to Lana, her face a shade paler, she said, How are you with mice?
I'm not scared of them, if that's what you mean, Lana said, grinning. Do you want me to come with you to offer moral support?
Yes, please.
It's gone behind the dresser, Bertie said when the two women appeared in the kitchen.
Lana closed the door behind her.
Ethel, the kitchen maid, was standing on a chair, squealing with fright.
Let me have a look.
Lana bent right down, almost on her stomach, and looked under the enormous pine dresser, holding dozens of utility plates and bowls. Peering out at her was a quivering little brown creature with bright eyes.
Poor little thing, she said as she scrambled up.
It's terrified. Not as terrified as me,
Ethel said, clinging onto the chair.
Why don't you all leave the kitchen for 10 minutes while I try to catch it, Lana said.
As soon as Bertie and the maid disappeared, followed by a sheepish Maxine, Lana located the larder and found the cheese. She crumbled a tiny piece onto a saucer, then put it by the back door. She opened it and kept it ajar with a milk bottle. Then she waited. After a few minutes, the mouse poked his head out. Lana hardly breathed. It emerged and sniffed at the slight breeze from the open door, then ran towards it. It stopped when it discovered the cheese crumbs. It grabbed one and scampered across the stone threshold and straight out of the back door. Immediately, Lana closed it and went to call the cook.
"It's all safe," she said, as Bertie came in with the terrified maid.
"Where's Maxine?"
"Gone back to her office, no doubt," Bertie said.
"What did you do?"
"I just let it out," Lana said, laughing. "It was only a little field mouse. It wouldn't have done anyone any harm."
"Oh, I wouldn't kill it," Bertie said emphatically. "I don't kill anything. But they're not right in the kitchen. We have regular inspections and we don't want to be closed down."
"Then the perfect solution is a cat," Lana said. "If you had a cat, I guarantee you wouldn't have any more problems."
Chapter 23
Lana's optimistic mood dwindled over the next few hours. She was sure the powers that be at Dr. Bernardo's headquarters would never allow a woman to take over Harold's position. Before the war had started, she'd had several drivers wind down their windows and tell her she should be at home looking after her husband and not be a danger to everyone on the roads. She always ignored their rude comments, tossing her red hair and staring ahead. But now she began to falter. And she hadn't driven for several months. Well, there was nothing she could do until she heard from Maxine. She wished the new term had started, so she could keep occupied in class, but they wouldn't be returning for another 10 days, and by that time she'd be gone, either home or with luck to Bingham Hall. As it was, she'd finished marking their end-of-term tests, but it was pointless to prepare the new term, as Mr. Benton would likely have different ideas. She dictated a brief letter to all the parents to explain that Mr. Benton would be returning, ready for the new term.
"Oh, that's the best news I've heard for a long time," Mrs. Dayton said, her eyes gleaming with triumph, as though she alone had brought back the headmaster. "The children will be delighted."
Lana said nothing.
The woman stopped clacking her typewriter and looked Lana in the eye.
"Bit of a shock for you, I expect, Miss Ashwin," she said.
"Not at all," Lana returned coolly. "I knew from the start it was only a temporary position." Why should she explain anything to this awful woman?
"I don't expect you imagined it would come to an end quite this soon."
Mrs. Dayton tapped a few keys, then with a flourish she banged the carriage return.
"I'll leave you to it then, Mrs. Danvers," Lana said, calling her by the nickname on purpose this time. "I believe there'll be 60 or so letters to type, and I don't want carbon copy letters going out. The parents must all have an original. When you've finished, you may leave them on my desk for signature."
With that, Lana swept out of the room and back to her office. Putting Mrs. Danvers in her place had only given her a few moments' pleasure. She sighed. She might as well go back to her room and start packing. Janice was in the sitting room reading when Lana entered the cottage. "You'll be pleased to hear Priscilla and I are leaving the cottage," Lana threw over her shoulder as she was about to go up to her bedroom.
"What?"
Janice looked up, startled.
"You'll soon have the cottage to yourself,"
Lana managed to stop an irritable note in her voice.
As she expected, Janice didn't bother to hide her expression of delight.
"Really? What's up?"
"My time is what's up. Mr. Benton is coming back as headmaster." "And that's all I'm telling her," Lana thought, not waiting for Janice's response as she leapt up the stairs. She looked around her room. Not only the cottage itself, but even her bedroom had never felt like home, particularly with Janice around, and she'd almost welcomed the arrival of Priscilla to take some of the heat out of their awkward relationship. She began a letter to her parents, determined not to mention her job had come to an end until she'd heard from Maxine. She was just signing off the letter when Janice came running up the stairs, saying Mrs. Danvers had an urgent telephone call for her. Oh, please, not one of her brothers. Lana flew over to the school, heart banging, as a feeling of dread landed in the pit of her stomach.
"Take it in Mr. Benton's office," Mrs. Danvers said, pasting a smile on her thin lips.
She grabbed the receiver.
"Hello? It's Lana Ashwin.
Maxine here."
"Oh."
Lana sat down with a thump.
"Lana, you'd only just gone 2 minutes when I had a call from the hospital. Harold collapsed in the town. Nothing to do with his forthcoming operation, apparently. They think he's had a mild heart attack. Thank goodness someone from one of the cafes helped him and called the ambulance. He's all right, but they've given him strict orders to rest before his operation. I was wondering, any chance of you clearing out of the cottage right away and maybe starting here tomorrow? You wouldn't be letting anyone down at the school, seeing as it's still closed for the summer."
"What about head office?"
"I've phoned and explained. They're absolutely delighted. I told them I would send all the details to them tomorrow so they can get the official paperwork out to us."
"Oh, Maxine, I'm so sorry for poor Harold. But yes, we'll be over tomorrow with our things. I can't thank you enough."
"No need," Maxine said firmly, but Lana detected the relief in her voice.
"You've got me out of a difficulty. I know it's only for the time being, but something else might turn up in the meantime."
"I hope so."
Lana paused. "Oh, will I be driving Harold's car, the Rover?"
"There isn't another one," Maxine said, chuckling. "Is that all right?"
"A good, reliable motor."
"More than all right," Lana said happily.
"Sorry I can't send someone over with the car, but no one else drives, so you're going to be really popular around here."
"That'll make a nice change," Lana laughed. This was a new phase in her life. Something good was going to come from her dismissal from the school. She could feel it in her bones.
It was bright and sunny late morning when the taxi passed through the colonnade of lime trees and the driver dropped Lana and Priscilla outside the orphanage. Lana had telephoned Mr. Shepherd to explain she'd be leaving right away, but she'd had to leave a message with his secretary, along with her forwarding address at Bingham Hall. She hadn't bothered to say goodbye to Mrs. Danvers, just made sure she'd left the office tidy for Mr. Benton's return. Janice had merely wished her good luck, that she'd need it, looking after all those difficult kids. Hearing that had made Lana even more sure that her natural place would be at Bingham Hall.
"Does the architecture remind you of anything?" she asked Priscilla.
Priscilla shrugged, then said,
"I suppose it looks a bit like a castle with that turret and everything."
"Yes, it does," Lana agreed. "What's inside the turret? Do you know?"
"It's the chapel,"
Priscilla said shortly, as she pulled the bell cord beside the massive oak door.
"Ah, where we can hold the service."
Charlie answered the door and immediately took their cases. "You'll be on the third floor, and Miss Priscilla, you'll be back in the dormitory. I'll take these to the rooms."
Priscilla pressed her lips together, but Lana touched her arm, and the girl gave her a small smile.
"Good morning, Miss Ashwin," Maxine said, appearing in the great hall. "Welcome back, Priscilla. Why don't you come with me and leave Miss Ashwin to unpack?"
Lana followed Charlie up the wide, curving oak staircase, her breath a little short by the time she set foot on the third floor landing. She grimaced and made a vow to do more walking while she was here.
"There we are, miss." Charlie set her case in Lana's room. It smelled of polish, and there was a vase of fresh flowers on the windowsill.
Just that small gesture made her feel as though she was welcome. Everyone working here was trying to do their best to help these little souls, and she would now be one of them. She felt content for the first time since she'd arrived in Liverpool. It didn't take long to unpack. Lana looked out of the window that was at the front of the house, looking down the sweeping drive. She took in the clear view of the colonnade of lime trees, which formed a beautiful arcade, and her heart lifted. This would be her peaceful place to renew her energy, to help her feel she belonged. She refused to remind herself that it would only last for a few weeks. She'd face that when the time came. "You're just in time for coffee," Maxine said, smiling as she met Lana in the great hall. There was a rush of feet. "Here they all come for their milk and biscuits." They poured into the hall from all directions, talking, pushing, shouting. "Children," Maxine said, clapping her hands, "stop this noise immediately. I have something to tell you. Mr. Harold is not very well at the moment, and the doctor has ordered him to rest before his operation. So he'll be away for a few weeks. But we have a new lady who'll be taking his place, Miss Ashwin. Some of you already know her from the village school. Please make her welcome and don't make a nuisance of yourselves, you boys, begging for rides. You know there's a petrol shortage."
"Ladies can't drive," a freckle-faced young lad called out scornfully.
"That's all you know,"
chimed Betsy, who Lana recognised.
"You don't know nothing," the boy rounded on the child. "You're only a girl with a funny brown face."
Betsy burst into tears.
"Enough," Maxine clapped her hands together. "That was extremely rude and hurtful, Jack, and you will apologise to Betsy immediately."
"I'm not going to. She does look funny. She don't look like any of us."
"Immediately after you've had your break, you will come to my office," Maxine said, and Lana saw the flash of anger in the matron's eyes. "Now go and have your milk and biscuits, all of you, and no more of this nonsense. Betsy, if you stop crying, you can come and sit with me and Miss Ashwin."
She paused.
"Those who don't believe ladies can drive will not ever be offered a ride in the car, and that includes you, Jack, so pay attention."
Betsy was perfectly right. Ladies can drive just as well as gentlemen can, and don't you forget it. Is that clear? There was a chorus of,
"Yes, matron."
"They won't be as good as men drivers," Lana heard Jack mumble to one of the other children as they pushed one another into the dining room.
"Jack's a bit of a handful," Maxine said. "Always has to have the last word, but another one with a sad story, as they all do."
"I think you're all marvellous," Lana said. "I know even with spending time with Priscilla how different children are when they've gone through something dreadful. You can't let them get away with everything, and yet you have to be very patient and understanding. Talking about Priscilla, I didn't see her go into the dining room."
"She said she wasn't feeling very well, so I put her in the sick ward. Dolores is keeping an eye on her."
"Oh, she didn't mention not feeling well," Lana said. "I'll pop down and see her later."
Chapter 24 Lana couldn't wait for Charlie to take her to the coach house, now used as a garage, where Harold kept his precious motor car. It belonged to Lady Greenway from the village, Charlie told her. Her husband bought it brand new several years ago, but he died fairly recently. They had a chauffeur, but her ladyship's now gone to live with her daughter and son-in-law, so she gave it to Bingham Hall as a very generous gift. Harold was over the moon, as it was a much better motor than he used to drive. He paused to open the garage doors.
"There it is. What do you think?"
"Oh, a Rover 14, Lana exclaimed, clapping her hands at the sleek black motor car. "I'd say it's a 36 or 7.
"I don't know about that," Charlie said, stroking his chin. "Only know Harold was chuffed when it was delivered a few weeks ago."
He paused.
"Can't believe the chap's had a heart attack. He's a good bit younger than me. You never know what's round the corner, do you?"
"No, you don't," Lana said, "but that doesn't mean it's all going to be bad." She ran her hand gently over the boot.
"Is there a key?"
"Yep, he keeps it on this shelf." He reached upwards and felt along a shelf, then handed her the key.
"It's the only one we've got, so be careful with it."
"I will. But it doesn't seem very sensible to have only one key. What if it got lost?"
"I'll let you work that one out, miss," Charlie grinned. "Anyway, there should be some petrol in the tank. Mrs. Taylor has the ration card and the log book at the journey, so I'll leave you to it then."
He
He doffed his cap and disappeared. Lana opened the door and sank into the leather seat behind the steering wheel. She sniffed the leather, giving a sigh of satisfaction, feeling completely at home. If only the job was permanent, she'd be more than content. But she mustn't think such things when poor Harold was still in hospital. She was simply helping him out, that was all. She pulled the choke halfway, turned the key and pressed the starter button. She let it run for a minute, then put the gear into reverse. Slowly, she eased the car out of its home. She'd drive into the village to see if there was anywhere she could have another key cut. It would be a good excuse to get the feel of the motor, which was much bigger than she was used to. That didn't worry her, but she needed to understand the way it handled. The tyres crackled down the drive, tossing the shingle, immediately bringing back the scene when she'd first walked up to Bingham Hall and the Rolls-Royce with Carl Best had passed her. He had caught her eye, and it was as though he'd looked into her soul. She'd felt then he was someone of importance, someone special. Strange how she now knew his name and that he was Peter's father, and had spent several hours in his company. But she hardly knew anything else about him. But that was the war. No one was allowed to say what they were doing, and it was far worse because this man was German and had been a member of that odious regime, even if he wasn't a Nazi any longer. She mentally shook herself. She had to get rid of such an unpleasant train of thought. The image didn't fit Carl Best. She turned right out of the drive and headed for the village, enjoying the feel of being in control of such a wonderful piece of machinery. She couldn't help breaking into a smile at the surprising turn of events when her attention was caught by someone running ahead, holding a cloth bag. Someone not much more than a child. Someone with blonde pigtails. The girl turned when she heard the car behind her. Priscilla. Where the blazes was she going? She was supposed to be in the sick ward. Surely she wasn't running away. Lana slowed right down and pulled over in the lane 100 yards in front of the child. Priscilla had obviously not seen who it was in the car as she kept up her running speed. Lana wound down the window.
Priscilla?
The girl froze in her tracks.
Miss Ashwin.
Get in the car, Priscilla. We can't talk through a window. Priscilla hesitated, and for a moment Lana thought she was going to bolt off. Instead, she opened the door and climbed in, pulling it shut behind her.
What's all this about? Matron said you didn't feel very well today, so she sent you to the sick ward.
Priscilla looked ahead, her face set like stone.
It was an excuse. I feel trapped in that place. It's like a prison.
That's a terrible thing to say, Lana said, when everyone is trying to be so kind.
I hate it there, Priscilla burst out. It wasn't so bad when I was with you. Even though the cottage was really Mrs. Parks's, she hates children. And I hate Mrs. Dayton. She's always trying to get me into trouble.
I'm sure she isn't, Lana said, but she knew Priscilla was right. Where were you going?
I wanted to see how that cat was.
The cat? For a moment, Lana couldn't think what Priscilla was talking about.
You know, the one that got hit by a motor or something that morning when I was late.
Ah, yes, you rescued him. Well, I'm sure he's recovered.
I thought if no one has claimed him, we could give him a home.
Sorry, love, animals aren't allowed.
Cook could probably persuade Matron. She's terrified the inspector will find mouse droppings in her kitchen and close it down.
Lana's lips curled in amusement. Priscilla wasn't going to be fobbed off. And they did need a cat at Bingham Hall, not only for the mice. It would be wonderful for the children as well.
I could come with you to the vet's. Would you, Miss Ashwin? I keep wondering if the vet saved his life.
I expect he did, love. Priscilla bit her lip. Then she said,
Miss Ashwin, if you're now at Bingham Hall, who will be in place of you at the school?
Mr. Benton's coming back. Priscilla instantly pulled a face.
I hate that man. He was horrible to me when Mummy and Daddy were lost.
She broke into sobs. Lana put her arms around the shaking child. Come on, love. You've been very brave and you have to go on being brave. But you have me as a friend.
I'll have to go to the school for my classes and you won't even be there. Only that horrible Mrs. Dayton and horrible Mrs. Parks and the horrible headmaster.
Try not to be too harsh with Mr. Benton. He's come back from helping to fight the war for England because he was shot in the arm. He had to have it amputated.
Oh,
Priscilla looked shocked.
How will he be able to teach with only one arm?
He'll just get used to it, Lana said. It must be awful for him, so he'll need everyone's support.
It still doesn't make me like him, Priscilla said vehemently.
Let's forget about him for the moment. Lana gently pulled back and started the engine. I was going into the village to have another key cut for the motor car, but we'll go to the vet's instead, and you can be my first passenger. We'll check and see what's happened to the cat, and then go straight back to Bingham Hall, or Matron will be raising the roof wondering where you are. So, tell me where I have to go.
All right.
Priscilla lowered her gaze, then glanced up at Lana.
It's lovely that you've come to Bingham Hall, Miss Ashwin. I shan't mind it quite so much.
I'm glad, Lana said, smiling at the child. She couldn't tell Priscilla that Maxine had only given her a couple of months at the most. Priscilla led her down a side street of large houses, which had mostly been divided into flats, except the vet's. Lana parked the motor where Priscilla suggested. The two of them walked up the drive to a substantial Edwardian house, painted white with decorative timbers. An open porch ran across the front and looked as though it continued around the side of the ground floor. The house was set in a fair-sized garden, and although the house and garden had an air of neglect, Lana loved it on sight. Priscilla knocked loudly on the front door, and a woman in a white coat ushered them in and led them to a waiting room where a large black dog was barking loudly. His owner, a stout lady, was trying to quieten him down.
"My little friend here brought in an injured cat a few weeks ago, and we wondered how he was," Lana told the nurse. "He was a big black and white cat."
Priscilla opened her arms to indicate the size, a worried expression crossing her face.
"Do you remember me?"
"Oh, yes, of course." The nurse hesitated. "Mr. Drummond's unfortunately had to remove his back leg, but he's all right," she added quickly. "We found his owner, who was very relieved and happy to have him back." Lana looked at the nurse. "I don't suppose we could have a quick word with the vet, could we? Priscilla would like to thank him in person." "Let me see if he's free. Just one moment." She was back. "Come with me." Lana and Priscilla followed her down a short passage and knocked on the first door. A voice told them to come in. "Just a couple of minutes," the nurse said, "as Mr. Drummond has a busy afternoon in front of him." She clicked the door behind her.
"Ah, the young lady who saved Blackie's life."
A well-built man of about Lana's height, somewhere in his early 40s, with twinkling eyes and unruly brown hair, rose from his desk and extended his hand first to Priscilla and then to Lana. "Do sit down."
"You took his back leg off," Priscilla said almost accusingly. "How will he walk and run with only three legs?"
"He will," Mr. Drummond smiled. "It will become second nature very soon. His owner is overjoyed to have him back. She was beside herself when he didn't turn up for his supper that night."
He turned to Lana.
"Your daughter is an exceptional young lady. Most people would have left the cat where it was, probably frightened they'd get bitten."
"Priscilla's not my daughter," Lana said, smiling at her. "But I'd be very proud if she was."
She was gratified to see Priscilla give a half-smile back. "We've come from Bingham Hall."
"Ah, Dr. Bernardo's."
"That's right. We have mice in the kitchen and wondered if you know of a cat that needs a home, one that doesn't mind a lot of children and noise and is a good mouser."
"I might have just the one," Mr. Drummond said. "An elderly lady came in 2 days ago in tears because she's going to live with her daughter, who unfortunately lives on a main road with very little garden. She was terrified that if she took her cat with her, he'd get killed on the road. She's left him with me, hoping I could find a loving home for him."
"How old is he?"
Lana asked, thinking it was not much use taking in a cat in its last years, who probably wouldn't be swift enough to catch any mouse.
"Oh, still young, only three. A fine cat."
He got to his feet. "Stay there a moment and I'll bring him in. Name's Rupert," he grinned.
"The cat, not me. I'm Frank."
Priscilla giggled. It was such a sweet sound to Lana's ears. And what a nice man Mr. Drummond was. Frank Drummond came back with an enormous ginger and white cat in his arms. He put him on the desk and the cat blinked at Lana and Priscilla with beautiful golden eyes.
Priscilla put her hand out to stroke his head, and Rupert began to purr like a sewing machine.
"He's gorgeous," Lana said.
"He needs a good home," Mr. Drummond said, then added, "Don't we all?" Lana detected a flicker of sadness in the vet's eyes, even though he was smiling. She wondered briefly what had led him to make such a remark. He sounded as though he'd been badly hurt by someone. Or was she imagining things?
"Oh, can we take him, Miss Ashwin?" Priscilla said, patting Lana's arm. "Please!"
It was the first gesture she'd made towards Lana, and her heart turned over. Rupert would be Priscilla's cat, she was certain. "We need to speak to Matron Fairslove," she said.
"Would you like to telephone her from here?" Mr. Drummond said.
"The thing is, we can only keep a healthy animal for a week, and then I'm afraid..." Lana shook her head and shot a warning glance in Priscilla's direction, but the girl was completely absorbed with tickling Rupert under his chin.
"Well, you know what I mean," Mr. Drummond said softly, catching Lana's eye.
"I'd better speak to the matron myself," Lana said, looking at her watch. "I think she'll agree, but for now, she'll be wondering where we are."
Priscilla opened her mouth to protest, but Lana stopped her by gently taking her arm.
"Thank you for seeing us, Mr. Drummond, and I hope we'll be back shortly to collect him."
"I do hope so," the vet said, shaking Lana's hand. "He's a lovely boy and apparently gets on well with children."
He turned to Priscilla.
"Oh, I almost forgot, young miss. That cat you rescued. The lady left me something to give to whoever had rescued her beloved Blackie."
He went to his desk drawer and picked up a brown envelope, then handed it to Priscilla. Back in the car, Priscilla tore open the envelope. She read out the note.
"For the kind person who found my darling Blackie and took him to the vet, this is a little something to show my appreciation, Grace Martin."
Priscilla retrieved a slip of paper.
"It's a pound note," she said, looking at it with wonder in her voice, and turning it over. "I would have done it for nothing."
"I know you would, love," Lana said, smiling, "but Mrs. Martin obviously wanted you to have it. We'll tell Matron so she can keep it safely for you."
"I want to keep it myself," Priscilla said tightly.
"It's a lot of money, and you've no way you can lock it up. Matron has a safe in her room."
"No, please don't tell her about it. It's mine, and I shall hide it."
Lana hesitated. The child was old enough to look after and be responsible for her own things, but it wasn't the same as living in a house with your mother and father. There was no privacy in the dormitories. She drove up to Bingham Hall and switched the engine off. "All right," she said, turning to Priscilla. "It'll be our little secret." She was rewarded with a rare smile. When Lana and Priscilla stepped into the Great Hall, there was pandemonium. Children were flying in all directions, the girls screaming, the boys chasing them and calling out that they were babies. Ethel was standing on a chair again, and Maxine was trying to gain control. Lana knew at once what had happened.
"Two mice this time," Maxine said as she saw Lana. "Bertie's going bananas. I think we'll have to get a cat."
She clapped her hands loudly and roared to the children, who immediately stopped in their tracks.
"It's more frightened of you than you are of it," she said.
Lowering her voice, she turned to Lana.
"Animals are against the rules at Bingham Hall, but I suppose having a cat who's earning its keep could be seen as part of the workforce."
Lana grinned. "And I know just the very one."
Chapter 25
"I'm just going to collect the cat," Lana told Bertie the next morning. She'd arranged to pick up Rupert at 9 o'clock, before the surgery opened.
"Not before time, hen," Bertie said, raising her flushed face from the oven and taking out a huge pie for the day's dinner.
"I've seen one of the little rascals again this morning. Cheeky as they come, just sitting looking at me, nose twitching."
She set the pie on the vast pine table and studied it critically. A little gravy was seeping out at one of the corners.
"Not bad."
"It smells lovely," Lana said, sniffing the air. "Rupert is going to love living here with these sorts of aromas."
"Oh, and we'll be pleased with him when he keeps these rodents out of my kitchen," Bertie said, pulling a face.
"I'm sure we will. What I need is something to put him in. Have we got a big basket?"
Let me see. Bertie straightened up. I'll have a look in the scullery. I think there's something that will do the job. She came back with a large, flattish basket. This should do the trick. If he's well behaved, it will. If he doesn't like the idea of coming back with me, there's nothing to stop him jumping out, Lana said, taking it. Well, wish me luck. Priscilla had wanted to go with her to collect Rupert, but Maxine had told her to go with Athena to help look after some of the younger children she was taking swimming. They'd already left on an early bus for Liverpool. He'll be here when you get back, Lana had assured her. He'll need to be quiet anyway at first so he can settle in. She and Priscilla had decided that the best place for him at night was a bed in the scullery, but to leave the door open to the kitchen, as that's where the mice were first seen. She pulled up outside the surgery and grinned to herself. It was the first time she'd seen Priscilla so excited, and all because Rupert was going to make Bingham Hall his home. Lana had to admit she was just as delighted. Mr. Drummond's expecting you, the same nurse said as she opened the door, first door down. Before she'd raised her hand to knock, Frank Drummond had opened the door, a happy smile on his face. Do come in, Miss Ashwin. He peered round. Where's that young lady of yours? Gone swimming, but she can't wait to get back and see him. The vet nodded. I just want to go through a couple of details with you. Have you ever had a cat? Yes, we've always had cats at home. My mother loves them. Dad too, even though he pretends otherwise. That's good. He caught her eye and looked as though he was about to say something but thought better of it. Give him any leftovers twice a day. Be careful to remove fish bones. Plenty of fresh water, not too much milk. I never think it's that good for them. He's a lovely cat who I think will settle in well. Don't let him out for a few days. He'll have to have a dirt box to start with. But you've got all the garden he could ever want, so when he's used to the home, let him come and go as he pleases. He took his glasses off and looked directly at her. Any questions? I don't think so. Oh, one. Has he been doctored? Yes. He shouldn't stray far now. He grinned at her. No more chasing after the lady cats. All he'll be chasing is mice. He got up. I'll go and fetch him. Is that his basket? Yes, but I'm a bit worried he'll jump out. I'll carry him to the car, put the basket on the front seat, and I'll drop him in, then shut the door quickly. Once you get there, he won't be near any roads, so he should be fine. He came back holding Rupert, who was yawning from being woken up. Hold him for a minute, so he gets used to the smell of you, he said, handing the cat to her. She put him over her shoulder, like she used to her old cat, Binky, and Rupert allowed her to stroke him for about 2 seconds before he struggled and leapt down. He needs to get used to you. The vet bent and picked him up again. Come on, boy, you're going to a lovely new home with Miss Ashwin. He smiled at her, and she liked the way his eyes crinkled at the corners. Actually, I could pop over to the orphanage with you. I start a bit later today and go on an extra hour this evening. If that would help, he added. She hesitated. Maybe she was wrong, but she had the feeling he liked her. She didn't want to encourage him.